Brad, the human mind is a weird thing. I am not a mystical person. I'm not a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. I don't look for the universe to be giving me signs.
Yeah.
I don't find alignment in the stars that guide my life. But I think as a survival mechanism for this pandemic, my brain has seized upon the weirdest idea, and I cannot shake it. So I'm going to share it with you, okay?
Okay.
I have a small dog. He's 14 pounds. He's not a big dog. But for whatever reason, at Costco, I don't know, 10 months ago, I bought a giant-ass bag of dog food, right? Like, it's a big-ass bag of dog food. Yeah. I think because I saved 50 cents, I bought a big one. I don't know. Anyway, I have somehow got it into my head, Brad, that the, quote, pandemic will be over when I finish that bag of dog food.
Oh, my God.
From 8 months ago, honestly, like from week two of the pandemic, I was like, well, when that bag of dog food is gone, that's when the pandemic is over.
Oh, my God.
And it is the weirdest thing, Brad, that every time I go to feed my dog, I'm like, well, we're making progress on that bag.
One step closer to the
end. But what is that, Brad? Why has my brain seized upon this weird pattern that is not a pattern? There's no causality there. Why is my brain thinking that as soon as I finish that bag of dog food, which is probably about 4 to 6 months away, I'm going to be out of this pandemic?
Plus, Ollie is a very small dog.
I mean, very small.
We're taking baby steps towards the end of this pandemic. At this point, you would be doing us a favor if you went over there and took a couple of handfuls yourself.
You're like, Dave, come on, take one for the team and start eating some dog food.
Wow, you're looking for the end, and when we get to the end of this dog food, and what do you think is going to mentally happen when this inevitably does not happen?
Well, here is the weird part, and I think this is why my brain is sticking with it. It's right now that bag is tracking to about 5 to 6 months from now.
Yeah.
And that's looking like when the majority of people will be vaccinated in the U.S.,
really?
You know, like May, maybe June. And it's weird to me that it's working. It shouldn't work. There should be no correlation. It's a damn bag of dog food for a 14-pound dog. It shouldn't work. And yet my brain, having seized on it, is now like, well, this pattern is working. I'm going to stick with this pattern.
Yeah, I'm going right with it. You're right. That is very odd.
It's weird, right? I'm saying this to you as a friend.
Yeah, I don't I don't know how you shake something like that.
I don't know. It's weird because, listen, on part of me, I know that my brain is reacting to what in any other situation would be considered an irrational situation.
Yeah.
Millions of people are being infected. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, are dying. My brain is trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
But to seize on the idea that this giant-ass bag of dog food is the indicator of when it's going to be over is the weirdest thing my brain could have done.
There's a bigger question here, and that is, what global crisis are you going to solve with the next bag of dog food? When you're done with this bag of dog food, there's going to be another global crisis somewhere. Maybe it's a war, maybe it's famine. What's next on the list?
I will tell you this, Brad. The World Health Organization and the Rotary Clubs International have almost solved polio. There's two countries left. So maybe I need to get one other, maybe medium-sized bag of dog food after this pandemic is over. And we'll, together, we're going to solve polio.
Now, do you keep the same dog food brand? Is it consummate on the brand? Or if, to solve different global crises, do you have to switch brands?
I've got to switch it up to Alpo, and maybe we'll start making some progress on this or that front. You're right.
Or Old Roy. Wasn't that in National Lampoon's
Old
Christmas
Roy.
Vacation?
But what is this called? Is this called magical thinking? Is that what this is?
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely magical
thinking.
Why? But as a friend, let's be a pop psychologist for a minute. Why do you think my brain is doing this?
Oh, that's real easy. Because the thing is, logically, there has to be an answer. And by the way, logically, there is an answer. Everybody wears a mask. Everybody takes a few courses in self-discipline, and we could get past this. And also with a functioning government that supported people through this, instead of saying, "Well, go to work anyway and take your chances." Schmuck.
Good luck, kid. Kick him out the door.
Yeah. You know, there are ways. This is solvable. This is very solvable. But since this has been going on for so long and there is no solution, your brain is looking for whatever else might work. we don't have leadership at the highest, most important places. Fine, I'll take the dog food.
Well, I want to say to the entire Comic Lack crowd and to the world, frankly, I'm sorry that my dog is only 13, 14 pounds. He's doing his best.
He's
God
doing his
him.
Very best.
And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about the causality and correlation of dog food and global pandemics and making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm not touching any of that. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal, Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We got a really, really special show this week.
Yeah.
So before we dive into it, I want to give a huge thank you and a shout out to our sponsors for this week's show. The good folks over at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the new Wacom One, which both Brad and I have in our studios, along with actually multiple models of Wacoms. We're basically fanboys for Wacom at this point with our multiple Wacoms around the studio, Brad.
Yeah, and that's what makes this sponsorship so good, because we can tell you with all genuine honesty that we use this product, we like this product. I couldn't imagine using anything else, to be honest with you. And now that they've got that Wacom One that is so easily transported, I don't even have to be tempted. It's just a really great partnership between us and the people at Wacom.
And did I tell you the good news, Brad, on my part, is that I'm going to get myself a new Wacom when I'm done with my current batch of flea and tick shampoo. As soon as I run out of that shampoo, I get to buy myself another Wacom. So I'm really excited. All my dog-based choices are really going well in my life.
This is fantastic. Wow, I can only imagine what's around the corner. Hopefully, Ollie's already been fixed. So, Dave, I've got an idea for this week's show, and it's going to be something we don't often do. It's going to be a theme show, and the theme for this show is going to be the top 10 tips we could give somebody if they were just starting their webcomic today.
So, you're a brand new cartoonist.
Yep.
Or you're just getting out of the gate and you're like, oh, what do I do? And I don't know why I always make people sound like Mickey Mouse. What do I do? What do I do?
Yeah.
How many bags of dog food do I have to get?
And what brand?
Today's show, Brad, is entirely top 10 tips to getting started and how to get out of the gate. Yeah?
I started thinking about this when we had that Patreon question that was asking, is it a good idea to start in January? And I started thinking about that, and it's like, you know what? I bet you there's more people like that are maybe thinking about starting in January.
Mm-hmm.
And even if there's not, I wanted to have a show in the archive that when this thing comes up in the future, and it does from time to time, I'm just starting out, what do I need to know? When that comes up, I want to have a show in the archive that we or even our listeners can point somebody to and say, here's 10 things to keep in mind. These are the most important 10 things to have in mind, and then let it rip.
Right.
So here's what we're going to do. This is our Getting Started show, top 10 ideas for if you're just starting out. And number one is one that I'm going to talk about and I'm passionate about. And it's going to sound really weird, and it's going to sound almost like a dodge, but I can't tell you how very much I am adamant that this is a number one thing you need to do. Okay. And it is, you need to go in with the right attitude. You need to have the proper attitude. And I guess that there's another way of saying that, and that's to have realistic expectations.
Yes.
Okay? Because if you're anything like me, but remember, we talked about this before. When I started out, my big plan was to post my comic and make the syndicates say, oh my God, this is amazing. We need to sign this person up immediately. I can't imagine that you were much different, Dave.
No,
I was the same. You were going to post this thing and take over the world.
This was going to be I was going to show them by my mere presence online that I was somebody they had to sign to a syndicate contract.
I can't imagine that's unique to us, right?
No.
So here's what I need to tell you if you're just starting your webcomic. it's not going to happen. All right. It's not going to happen. And that's okay. In fact, it's probably a little bit better that it doesn't happen. I think there's a lot of problems with being an overnight success, but the fact of the matter is, you're not good. You're not, and you're a better way to put that. You're not as good at this as you're going to be in a few years.
Yeah, that's, I think a nice way of saying it is you're not good yet.
You're not good yet.
Because the positive outlook of you will get there. It's just not yet. Yeah.
And that encompasses two things. Number one, it's because, as we talked about on an earlier show, being a cartoonist these days is more than just making a comic and waiting for money to fall from the sky. Right. And so you might be very good at the basic things of being a comics artist, but there's so much more to it than that you're going to have to pick up along the way that you're not ready for it yet until you've been doing it for a while firsthand. And also, there's this. You're probably just not really good, period. In other words, I've been looking at webcomics for 20 years. Doing webcomics.com, just being out there and being fascinated with this topic, I see a lot of comics at the amateur and pro and the pro level.
You do, yeah.
And the thing about it is, I can tell you that 80% of the people who are not doing very well in comics or not doing as well as they clearly think they should be doing, the problem is they're a good artist, they're not a very good writer, okay? If you turn that just to humor comics alone, that number raises to 99%. So many people who are just flailing, they're just not getting where they want to go. It's because they came into comics, they're a good artist, they're not a very good writer. Now, that's okay. By the way, go back and look at the first several years of Greystone Inn. I was not a very good writer. I had to learn that. I had to pick that up. I had to find my voice. Mm-hmm. I had to figure out what it meant to write a punchline, what it meant to set up a punchline.
Right.
I had to figure all that stuff out for myself. You're probably going to be in the same vein. Now, so far, everything I said is kind of, okay, so what? Here's the so what. Because I also see people who have been doing this for like 10 years and they still don't get it. They still haven't got to where they figure they should be. They look at other people who have surpassed them, and because they don't understand how this all works, they've come up with all kinds of excuses, all kinds of reasons it hasn't happened for them that doesn't have anything to do with make your comic better. In other words, they'll look at somebody like Scott Kurtz and they'll say, well, the only reason Scott is successful is because he started in 1998.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which completely dismisses everything that happened between 1998 and today. And also dismisses the fact that Scott does a very good comic. But here's the problem. These people are always looking outward for the reason that it hasn't happened for them. Always outward. They haven't found the right social media strategy yet. They haven't found that magic hashtag. They haven't found the right SEO strategy yet. They haven't found the right merchandise. They just haven't connected. All of the outward things, and you see them all the time. You see, if you follow webcomics Twitter, you see these people all the time, and they've got all kinds of reasons. And then you go and look at their comic, and like, oh, I see what's going on.
I see what's happening. Yeah,
you're a good artist. You're not a good writer. You need to be a better writer, and you need to look in the mirror and say, the reason I'm not doing as well as I think I should be doing is because of me. Because I need to get better. And if you keep looking outward, you're never looking inward. And it's all about the comic. It's all about, what do I say on this show week after week? Do a good comic. Right. That's why my number one tip is to go in with the right attitude.
To summarize, I want to make this actionable. To summarize, what is the right attitude? What is someone where you're like, good job, kid, you got the right attitude about this? Give me an elevator pitch of what the right attitude is.
I'm going to do this comic. It is what it is. I'm going to get better over time. Taking into what's that called? Dunning-Kruger syndrome.
Yeah.
Right now, you don't know enough to know how much you don't know.
Right.
Right. So I'm going to keep my eyes open. I'm going to learn. I'm going to enjoy the process. But chances are I'm not going to be very popular for a long time. And the reason for that isn't a magic hashtag, isn't SEO secret, one weird trick to SEO. It's I need to keep focusing on doing a better and better comic. That's your actionable thing. Keep your head firmly planted on that comic and don't spend a whole lot of time looking for the magic hashtag.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that because it keeps the focus where it should be in those first months, that first year,
yes.
Which is keep the eyes on the drawing table in front of you, basically.
Yes.
Look back through the comics that you have finished, you know, from last week, 2 weeks ago, and keep mentally working on them. How could I have tightened up that punchline a little bit more?
Yes.
How could I have reworked that? How could I have forecasted where the punchline was going better in panel one or panel two? How could I have developed that character better with just a few changes in words that could have let people know that they're from Detroit and they went to college and they mm-hmm. are currently unemployed? All the little things that you can do for character development and for joke development. Look back over that stuff and keep working on it in your mind about how you can do it better so that tomorrow's comic can get better.
Yes, particularly once you've been doing it for a long time, like 6 months or a year. Mm-hmm. Go back to that stuff that you wrote 6 months ago or a year ago. It's so great because you forgot what the punchline is now, right?
Yeah.
So you can experience your own comic for the first time and see exactly where it's fallen apart.
And also feel the well-justified joy in seeing that you have gotten better in those 6 months.
That's a great one in
terms of keeping your head focused on your work. When you look back, you'll be like, "Oh, I am making progress." And sometimes you don't see that until you've gone through, you know, a couple of dozen comics. But anyway, okay, great. So that's number one. Put your attitude in the right place. What's number two?
By the way,
I love a show where Brad has done all the heavy lifting, and all I have to do is come in with the color commentary and go, "Hey, yeah, ooh, all right, yes, I'm involved. Look at me.
I'm playing bags of dog food. You can do color."
Yeah, exactly.
So here's number two, and it's very simple. Just do it. I see so many young cartoonists that have all these questions that aren't important. In other words, like we kind of chided the person, is it okay to start in January? It's like, yeah, of course. It's okay to start in February.
Brad,
how do
I copyright my work, Brad? How do I copyright? Don't worry about it.
Point.
Just start drawing, you know?
Yep. Just do it. There is no right time. Oh, and by the way, there is no perfect concept. There is no perfect theme. Don't spend a lot of time trying to write the comic that you think is going to be popular. Do the comic that you wish existed in the world.
Yes.
That's what you do. Don't try to hit a demographic or a trend or something like this. Do your comic, even if you think it's really, really dumb. Even if you think it's so obscure that no one else could possibly like it. That's the comic I want to see you do, because I guarantee you it's not as obscure as you think it is. There's going to be more people who want to see it. Same thing what Dave said about copyright and trademark, all those questions that you think, oh, what if this, what if that? The bigger thing is, what if you just put that comic out there and start running? Do the comic you want to do. Don't worry about hitting a trend. Don't worry about it hitting a demographic. Do your comic and do it right now. Put it out there. Because chances are, again, as you learn, chances are you might want to restart this like a year or two down the road.
Yeah. In fact, I would say the odds are kind of high that might happen, you know?
And by the way, that's okay.
That's okay.
A sign of growth. That's wonderful problems to have.
And here's another benefit from just starting is that, and I'll put this in a musical context because sometimes it's helpful to remove it.
Mm-hmm.
Brad and I, if you were a starting guitarist, we could tell you all the best guitars, the exact strings you want to do, struts you want to buy, all the special stuff. But until you start playing, you don't know what strings your fingers react well to.
Right.
You don't know what guitar sound you like.
Mm-hmm.
So in just starting to play, you come to find out, oh, you know what? I actually prefer this guitar, these strings, that kind of thing. So Brad and I can tell you all the materials, we can tell you all the right formats to angle your desk at, and we do. By the way, you should take that into account. There's no problem with that. But what I'm saying is, if you try to micromanage it so that it's the perfect paper and the perfect pen and the perfect Wacom and the perfect situation, it's so much better to just start. Just start experimenting, and you'll see with days and weeks and months what your favorites are. You'll start to figure out what pens you like, what pens you don't like, what paper, what electronics you like, what programs you like. Just start, to Brad's point.
Absolutely. Now we come to number three, and everybody wants to know, how often should I update, right? Should I do daily? Should I do weekly? Should it be this? Should it be that? Here's the answer to that question. Your update schedule should be as often as you can, as long as you're hitting the three following requirements: frequent, consistent, and significant. You should update as frequently as you can while maintaining a consistency of quality mm-hmm. and a consistency of update schedule if possible, mm-hmm. as long as each one of those updates is significant. In other words, yeah. they have to mean something, they have to matter, they have to communicate to the people that are reading them. In other words, the biggest example of this, so many, many years ago, we had something called the Iron Man Daily Cartoonist Challenge,
yes.
right? And because they had to set some kind of a guideline, they said you had to update every day, and the updates had to be at least two panels. So some of the people who made it all the way to the end, in fact, all the way to the end and beyond, outpaced everybody else, were doing two panels that were incomprehensible. You couldn't tell what they meant, what it was supposed to happen. It was complete meaningless crap, frankly. The comics didn't matter, okay?
Yeah.
That's why significance is in there.
And here's a different version of saying significance.
Yeah.
Let's say you've set up a pattern of 10, 15 comics of a full page update. Each
yeah.
one is, wow, that's a significant update. But then all of a sudden you're like, hey guys, character sketch today. Just
yeah.
a little quick pencil sketch. That's what Brad is kind of intimating in terms of consistency, where it's
right.
something like you put something up, sure, but it's not what you've come to express to your audience as, this is what you expect when you come to this website. This is what you expect when
right.
you come to read my comic, you know?
Yeah. So number four, social media. My catch-all advice, don't. Okay? I see so many people, again, I see this time and time again. I'll see a person that has literally hundreds of thousands of tweets, and many of them are saying, why am I not famous yet? Why does nobody like my comic yet? I'm doing all this stuff. And then you look at the comic, and the comic is not very good. And the answer is because you're putting all this energy behind social media and not enough energy and focusing on doing a good comic and, mm-hmm. and doing it over and over and over and getting better. And I've actually had conversations with some of these people where they say, but I have to, Brad, I have to build my social media presence so that when the comic hits, I'm ready for it. There's nothing that could be less true than that. Here's what I want. Here's how I want you to pursue social media. Certainly every now and again, if you've got a thought to share, share it. If you've got some sketches you want to share or some work in progress, absolutely fine. And of course, you should be publishing your comic on social media. You mm-hmm. should be using social media as publishing. That does not mean a link like a teaser panel and send them back to the website to read the whole comic. That's horrible, horrible approach. It does not mean on Twitter, I got a link that takes me to Instagram so I can read the comic. That's not a good approach. You want your potential reader to be able to read the whole comic on the social media site that they're on without leaving, period. Go ahead.
I want to try to clarify what your thought is here.
Yeah.
So you're saying use social media. Yeah, that's fine. You can have a Twitter account. You can
yeah.
have an Instagram account.
Yeah.
But you're saying use it in a very utilitarian way.
Yes.
It's get the comic up there, put the entire comic up there.
Mm-hmm.
But don't waste time trying to build something that's not, build a castle out of sand, basically, because
right.
nothing's there yet, right? Is that what you're saying?
And certainly if people are sharing it and commenting, yes, revel in that and talk, you know, and discuss and all that other stuff. But most of what people are posting on social media is complete inane crap. You know, they'll retweet something, they'll talk politics, they'll talk this, they'll talk that. It's all a bunch of meaningless chatter, right?
Yeah.
Stop that. and again, they're doing it because they've been told that's how you build a social media presence. And in fact, we've given similar advice on the show later on when you are in audience building mode
mm-hmm.
to have a certain amount of that. But the problem is one or two tweets a day is plenty, right? If you want to tweet something during the day, you'll see people who fall down the rabbit hole and literally, Dave, hundreds and hundreds. I actually counted this one person. He had hundreds of tweets in a week and he was doing nothing. He had no comic yet, but he couldn't understand why his comic that he was posting intermittently wasn't super popular.
Huh,
I had a Patreon, a Kickstarter going at the time, a full-time comic, an exclusive comic on Patreon. I had stuff to promote, stuff to talk about. I think I had, during the same time, maybe a quarter of this person's tweets. And it's like, you need to stop tweeting so much. You need to put your focus on the comic, not all these tweets. So that's what I'm saying. And Dave, I think you've got it right. Utilitarian. Use social media as a utilitarian way to get that comic out there, but don't spend so much time on social media. It's a mind sap. It's a time sink.
The way I hear you're describing this is that, you know how a 7 or 8 year old, when they're not getting their mom and dad's attention, they're going, mom, 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 mom.
Yes.
But nothing of substance is being said. It's just a repetitive like action. Mom, 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 mom.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying that these starting cartoonists are doing? They're like, tweet, 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 tweet.
Right.
But nothing of substance is there, and so no actions being taken in terms of building an audience, right?
Right.
Okay. So I'm a little more generous in terms of social media. I think my attitude is actually quite similar to yours, but my attitude is if sharing it on social media makes you happy, so that it makes you want to continue to cartoon, then my attitude is go with God. Go have fun. Knock yourself out on social media. But I do actually agree with Brad that the focus should be on the comic and not so much about the inanity sometimes that is social media.
Right. And that's where they're falling down the time sink. And then it gets into politics or this other person. Or can you believe
or
this
even
person
worse,
said
just
this
checking.
Other thing?
How did my tweet from 4 hours ago? I'm going to check again. I'm going to check again. You know, and then you're not working on your comic. I get it. Yeah.
You've lost your focus.
All right, well, let's go on to the next one. This is a good list so far.
So this is number 5. Save your money. Don't advertise yet.
Oh, my God. Yes.
You see so many people.
Don't do this. Don't do this.
Do not put any. Social media is a fantastic promotion tool. And if you use it even in the scaled back utilitarian way that we're suggesting, you're going to get everything that you could possibly get out of it. Putting money behind advertisement is a really bad idea.
Yes.
I don't put money behind advertisement.
Huge cosign.
Dave
I don't
doesn't
either.
Put money behind
Couldn't
advertisement.
Couldn't cosign this bigger than I'm doing right now. This is
and
such a big cosign.
And here's the reason. To make advertisement work really, really well, you have to have a couple of things. Number one, really, the most effective uses of advertisement I've seen has been to sell a product. Not necessarily to advertise a comic, but to sell a product. Right. I want this
Actionable result from this ad. Yeah.
Yes. That's number one. And number two, if you're really going to pursue advertising, especially paid advertising, well, you need to know all kinds of things about the advertising market and the advertising process that you don't know. And I don't know. In other words, if you've got an advertising team behind you and you've got $10,000 to put into an advertising promotion, so you've got a whole bunch of people who are trained to do this and make it effective, to mold the message, to make sure that message shows up in the right place and in front of the right people. You got that kind of money. Now you're talking thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars. Then advertising works. The money that you got is you're just going to piss away.
Yeah, that $50 or $100 ad placement doesn't do shit.
Yeah.
Brad, do you remember when the kind folks at Facebook and Instagram invited us down to their offices? And, so in and amongst the perfectly lovely tour and the free food, as a cartoonist, I'll never say no to that. the lovely stocked full kitchen that they had. Anyway, one of the things that I remember them saying kind of passingly was that the advertising only really works at a certain scale, which is what Brad is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because at a certain scale, you get assigned a Facebook advertising consultant, and they help you with the A-B testing of which ad works, and they help you do the placement of the ad better, and you know, all the specific geographic, demographic, psychographic ideas that can help you place that ad better. Mm-hmm. And your $50 ad that you're, you know, hey, fun time comic, you like to laugh? You know, come check out Funtime Comic. Here you go, Facebook. Here's $100.
Yep.
That's $100 like Brad is saying that you're just pissing away. Nothing is going to happen from that.
Yep. And if your first idea when you're about to spend that money is to say, I need to find people who like comics, again, that's like McDonald's saying, we need to find people who like food.
Yep.
You don't have what it takes mentally. I don't want to say it that way, but you don't have the right background to make smart choices on this. And that's evidenced by people who advertise saying, well, I need to find people who like comics to advertise my comic.
Yep.
You don't have the right background, and therefore you're wasting your money.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. All right, Bradley, that was great. So what's number 6 on your list, my friend?
6 is merchandising. You remember from the very, very beginning days of webcomics, we joked when we were writing and co-writing the webcomics, How to Make Webcomics book.
Mm-hmm.
And we always said the first question we always get at comic conventions is, how many t-shirts do I print?
Yeah.
Right? Everybody wanted to know, how many t-shirts? Your advice on merchandising goes as follows. Wait 6 months.
Okay.
And then wait another 6 months.
Okay.
And then wait 6 months more. Don't get jumping into merchandising too soon.
Yeah,
and
boy, chances are, I agree. Yep.
Until you've got a really big audience, it's too soon. It's going to be too soon.
And here's the thing, Brad and I get it. You're excited to quote, be a cartoonist, with all of that entails in your mind. You want to have the website that has the store. Mm-hmm. You want to have a Wikipedia entry on your comic. You want to be able to go to Comic Cons. I get all that. I understand. As someone who wanted to be a cartoonist since the third grade, I understand what this desire is in you. But what we're saying, what Brad is saying in this one is merch. It's like a version of what Brad always says with crowdfunding. First, you need the crowd, then you go for the funding.
Right.
For merch, first you need a big, big crowd so that you can entice 10% of the crowd so that less than 1% will actually plunk down $20 for whatever the thing is that you're going to make, you know?
Right.
And it is always a smaller number than your heart wants it to be. And I say that as someone who's been cartooning now for... 22 years online. Mm-hmm. It is always smaller than you want it to be. Every once in a while, there's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
But 22 years in, I can tell you, it's always a smaller number than you want it to be in your heart.
Yeah.
And so, like Brad said, give it 6 months and give it another 6 months after that. It is too soon when you're starting to be worried about merch.
Yep. And not only that, don't forget Geiger's Law of Merchandising. The first
I always love it when there's a Geiger's Law.
This is Geiger's Law of Merchandising. The first person to say, I want that on a t-shirt is the first person to disappear when you bring out the t-shirt.
Yes. Oh, my God. I have known every permutation of that person. This needs to be a pin. This needs to be a poster.
Oh,
I'd love this if this was on a t-shirt for someone else.
Not for me.
Yeah, not for me. I'm going to cancel my Twitter account as soon as I've made this post.
Oh, my God. They disappear like the devil, you know,
brimstone. Here's the metaphor. It's like you making the t-shirt is like you flipping the switch in the kitchen and all the cockroaches scatter. I've made the t-shirt. Gotta go.
Yep. Zoom. It's like putting a crucifix in front of a Dracula.
By the way, that metaphor makes it sound like I live in a flop house in 1920. I don't have that many cockroaches at all. I don't have even one.
Not
Why
even
am I
one.
Saying
I don't even know what a cockroach is.
I don't even know what they look like. Are they blue? I don't know what a cockroach is.
So yeah, don't get all mixed up in merchandising. When later on, like a couple years, and I'm saying years down the road, if you want to dip your toe in, print on demand is a good way to kind of test things out because it's no upfront money from you. Just remember, you're not going to make a lot of profit on print on demand. Later on, when you can establish that there's a real demand for the thing that you want to do, then you're going to want to look at an offset print run and a Kickstarter and all that kind of stuff. But that is literally, I'm telling you, years down the road.
Yep. And again, starting years down the road, start, as Brad intimated, start with products where the cost of goods sold is small so mm-hmm. that your investment is not very big. So if it is, like we say, going to be a smaller response than you think, you're not in for $8,000 for books. You're in it for $500 for pins, you know, or something like that. And and so it's not as painful or, you know, so start with something small and manageable, like a print, a pin, something like that. But again, don't do it for years, literally years. Yep. This is a marathon, not a sprint. You will eventually get to do product. Today is not that day.
Because again, you're taking your eyes off of the ball. Your eyes right now should be on making that comic and doing it over and over and over and getting better at it. Yeah. You start with merchandising, you took your eye off the ball. Same thing.
You're already thinking about what kind of tile you're going to put on your roof when right now you should be building the foundation for that house.
Yes, got to dig that basement. Yep. So now we come to number seven. And this is a hopeful one, or I guess a little bit more optimistic than a couple of them. Prepare for success, because I am confident that success will come for you if you put the work in.
That's
success
great.
Is going to come, so you need to prepare for it. Don't be one of these yutzes that is ready to do a book and goes back and realizes that they only scanned their work or they only prepared their work in low res and don't have any high res images for the book because they only thought they were only going to be on a website. Mm-hmm. Remember, low res is about 72 dpi. For high res, you want to have at least 200 dpi. Yeah. And by the way, dpi is also commensurate with ppi. That's dots per inch or pixels per inch.
I'd wave off 200 dpi. I think 300 dpi. Don't
300
you think
at the, yeah, I was going to say 200 at the very least. You know what? Scratch that. 300. 300. Yeah. Let's not screw around with that.
You know why? Because hard drive costs are nothing nowadays. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be, it's an ever decreasing cost. Save at least at 300 dpi. If you draw really small, save it 400 dpi. That way you can always bring it up a little bit for book size. I think always have a CMYK color model saved rather than an RGB because you will be unpleasantly surprised when you go to do a colored print run what that RGB looks like. So I think 300 dpi CMYK, prepare for success, as Brad says, and don't throw anything out.
No, don't throw anything out. Again, like Dave said, hard drives are not expensive, cloud computing is not expensive. Also track your expenses. Because at some point you're going to shift into doing your taxes as a business, so start tracking your expenses as well. Mm-hmm. And also under the heading of prepare for success, start looking into web hosting. Now, as we've talked about before, it's perfectly good. In fact, it's maybe even a little bit preferable to start out just posting these on social media. But eventually, you are going to want to look for web hosting. You're going to want a home base on the web that you can always control things, and you can promote your Kickstarter someplace to send people to get the complete archive, on and so forth. Start preparing for web hosting. I'm a big fan of DreamHost, and I'm also a big fan of using WordPress. You've heard, go back into the archives where I talk about Tucheki, which is a plugin and theme combination for hosting web comics. We've got lots of information in the archives there. So start preparing for a website. You should have a website in the offing. Doesn't have to be there right now, but you should start to think about building it and so forth because you are going to want a home base on the web.
That's a great one, Brad. And I unfortunately don't have much in the way of advice for hosting. I use AWS, which is Amazon's system. Oof. Incredibly rigid. It hasn't failed in God knows how many years, maybe the better part of a decade. I've never had a problem with it, aside from it is incredibly non-intuitive. It takes me an hour of relearning things just to make a simple change because AWS's interfaces are so bad. So from an industrial standpoint, I love AWS. From a basic user standpoint, God, I hate AWS. I can't personally recommend it. It's like Amazon put a blind engineer in charge of designing that thing and said, go with God, have fun, you know, and it's impossible.
I had a horrible experience. Meanwhile, DreamHost, the few times I've had problems, I put a support ticket in, got responses.
Yeah, you've gotten very personalized responses.
And actually, a couple times, the person was like, hey, I was looking through your server. I saw a couple problems. If you give me permission, I'm just going to fix them while I'm here. Let's do it. Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah, so by comparison, on AWS, when I send in a ticket, Amazon personally assigns an AI to kick me in the ass, and that's what they do. So that's really nice.
To give you a personal,
Yeah, that's a very personalized service. So, okay, so what's the next one on the list, Bradley?
So we're actually up to number eight, and number eight is... stop looking at your stats. Okay. Now this one goes back to, I can't imagine anyone's actually looking at like page views and stuff like that. But when we started, Dave, we were slavishly looking at page views every day. We got some more page views than we got the day before. More returning or new user visits than we got the day before. How many visitors? How many page views? Today that's measured in social media. How many followers do I have? Did I pick up a bunch of followers when I posted that last thing? Well, if I posted something with a mermaid and I picked up three followers, I better post something else with a mermaid and all this other stuff. Stop looking at your stats. Certainly glance at them from time to time a week, you know, every maybe once a week or once every couple weeks, just to see if you're kind of going in a direction or whatever. And that is a little positive reinforcement. I get that. You want to know that people are responding. You want to know that you're picking up followers. And that is an enhancement. It's a way of feeling good about yourself.
Yep.
But, don't get all wrapped up in it. They're just numbers. They're going to go up over time as you get better. I guarantee it. Remember another one of the Geiger's rules of webcomics. It's impossible to hide good work on the web.
Yes, yes.
You will, as you get better, you're going to get more users, more followers, more people who want to talk about your comic and share it. It's Don't look at those stats. And I'm talking from personal experience. When I started out, I would be looking at my stats 10 or 12 times a day.
I
guarantee it. If you went back and looked, it would be that often. Didn't do me any good. And it took my eye off the ball.
Right. And here, I think both Brad and I will admit that it is a very human response to want to look at the stats, because when you're starting, you're not getting any feedback, at least commensurate with what your heart wants.
Yeah.
Your heart wants 4 emails an hour saying, hey, you're doing a great job. Just found this. Love it.
Yes.
Oh, it's great. It's great stuff that you're doing, right? That's what you want. And I get that.
Yep.
And so what happens is the stats become the sort of stand-in for constant feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just as guilty as Brad. It's a little bit equivalent to how, Brad, I don't know if you've ever had this when you're trying to diet or work out or hit the gym a lot, and you are told, hey, at best, check your stats once a week. Don't get too, you know, just do the work and then check it once a week. But you're like every human being ever, you're on that scale every 5 minutes, like, oh, I wonder if not having a sip of water made a difference, you know, that kind of thing.
And you're always, you if you're like me, because I've been there, you wake up first thing in the morning, you go and do your morning ablutions, you come back in, you step on the scale immediately, because that's the lowest you're going to weigh all day. It's artificially low, right? You haven't been eating for 8 hours. You just went to the bathroom. You got no clothes on because you just got out of bed. Maybe you got your boxer briefs on. That's it. And
I just want everybody to know, this is the least sexiest image you'll ever have of Brad. He just used the word ablution. He's now naked in a bathroom, standing on a scale. I think everyone is reverse turned on right now. I think is what's happening.
Well, naked in a bathroom, you know, there's some people that might find that appealing. One person, my wife, aside from that, nobody.
I'm going to call her right now. I bet she's like, nope, I'm out.
Nope. Forget about it. But that is the lowest you're going to weigh all day. And that's the only time I ever weigh myself. I'm way down, you know.
Brad chugs 17 espressos and then has a bunch of wheat, and he's like, "All right, here we go. Let's do this."
Wheat?
I don't know. I was trying to remember. Trying to remember what grain is that makes
you
clear.
Do I have a feed bag? I'm eating wheat.
I don't know. You're already naked in a bathroom. I don't know what you're doing in there. But anyway, all of this is to say is I get it. It's a human response to want to check your stats. Brad and I are not going to sit here and tell you you're never going to do it. You're going to do it. But we're going to say, I think what Brad is trying to say is be mentally aware enough to not let yourself fall into a pattern of got to check again, got to check again. Oh, I wonder what's happened. And what's, I remember when Google Stats made that real-time stats thing where you could see at that moment how many people were on your site and what pages they were checking out. And for the briefest of windows, I was like, oh, I fell into the hole of that one. I was like, where are they going? What are they doing?
What's going on? I wonder who that person is. Oh, that person's me.
Oh, there's someone from Taiwan. Oh, and they've left. They've left. Yeah. Oh, God, what did I do wrong?
They took a, maybe, and then you look at that comment, it's like, okay, no more jokes about pigeons.
Yeah,
pigeons are clearly not good with the Taiwanese
that's
audience.
That's a loser. Yeah. All right, Bradley, let's jump into the next one. What's the next one for us?
Number 9, lettering. For the love of God. Learn lettering. This one, it's bigger. We could devote an entire show to lettering, and we probably have.
We probably
somewhere
should
along
if
the,
we haven't done it yet. Yeah,
yeah. But there's so much for you to learn in terms of lettering. And as long as I'm bringing out the Geiger's laws, don't forget the Geiger's law of lettering. They're not going to read your comic if they can't read your comic.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a serious question. Have we put together a full list of the Geiger's laws? I'm
not
being joking.
Yet. I've got them written down somewhere because I was going to make them like social media memes, and then I was like, nah, this is dumb. So I've got some of them written down somewhere.
If you had to guess, and I'm not being facetious, how many ballpark number, what's the ballpark number of them?
Five or six okay. Geiger's laws.
Because I always jokingly in my heart be like, we're up to 110, but I was curious how many you actually have. Because they're good. That one is great. They're not going to read your comic unless they can read your comic. That's a great law.
Yeah. And it's so true. So let's just go off the top of our head. Number one, get a good dialogue font, right? Comicraft has a sale coming up on January 1st. You're going to be able to get every one of their fonts for $20.21 a piece. Blambot has fantastic dialogue fonts, some of which are free. Some of which are very, very well priced, and I looking at the licensing. If you look at the licensing deals, a lot of those free fonts are available for you to use in your webcomics. So check out Blambot. Get a good comic lettering font, okay? And then learn good typography. If you're using Clip Studio Paint, this is one that's a pet peeve of mine. If you're using Clip Studio Paint, the leading, that's the space between the lines of text, okay? The leading in Clip Studio is defaulted way too wide. So if you haven't gone in and adjusted the lettering, the leading to make it tighter, to bring those lines of text closer to each other, then you've got horrible lettering. All right. Yeah. Remember, your lettering, when you look at it, needs to look like a chunk of words. If it looks like separate lines of words, you've got it too loose. It needs to look like a unit.
Yeah, it's one of the few problems with that program being originally a Japanese language program is that the English language was not perfectly programmed for that one in terms of default settings. Yeah.
Yeah. Lettering is I'm a big, big fan of Clip Studio. Lettering is not a strong point with them.
And for those of you that are not familiar with it, so that you can Google search them and see what Brad is talking about, letting is L-E-T-T-I-N-G.
That is incorrect.
What's that?
Letting is L-E-A-D-I-N-G.
Is it?
Yes.
No.
It's not letting. It's letting because they used to use little slips of lead, the metal.
You're right. You are right. What was I thinking of? Oh, my God. All right.
No
well, great.
Idea.
Listen to Captain Genius over here. I do know that Kerning is K-E-R-N.
Yes.
I-N-G. But, oh, my God. I, for all this time, was oh, geez, Louise. All right. Well, I'm going to go quiet now in shame and let Brad keep talking about letting and Kerning.
I thought you were having a stroke. L-E-T-T. Is he going for a joke here?
I literally thought, no, anyway. Keep going.
So what you want to do also is follow Nate Picos. He's the person behind Blambot. I think he's at Blambot on Twitter. But anyway, find Nate, follow him, and go back and look at the media posts he's made, like the images that he's put on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He's got a master's class in it'll bring you right up to speed on good comics lettering. Go through all those and read through them. But in general, don't put like more than 3 word balloons in a panel where I've got to read a whole bunch of word balloons. And if you do have multiple word balloons, don't put the connectors behind other word balloons. Don't cross the word balloon tails. you need to learn good lettering. Remember, people read left to right, top to bottom. So many times beginners put, if you've got two speakers and one is on the left and one is on the right, and if it turns out that the right-hand speaker speaks first, they'll just put that word balloon over the right-hand speaker. Well, we always read that in the wrong order. You got to put your word balloons left to right. Don't cross the tails. You cannot cross the tails.
You know what? This is legit. We've got to make a whole episode about lettering because we could go for an hour on this.
Oh my God. I could go for so long.
If you and I took a minute and broke down all the 10 basic rules of lettering, we could have a really good show for you. Because I will say this, lettering is not only, in terms of Brad's great rule that they can't read your comic if they can't read your comic, I will say one thing more, which is that when comics lettering is good, it is legible, it's readable, it gets you through it, right? Mm-hmm. When comics lettering is great, the lettering adds to the mood of the comic.
Yes.
It helps portray the feel, the look, the tone of the comic. And it almost is like a silent character in the sense that it gives you something. There's weight and heft there in good lettering. So bad lettering, at the same time, can put the kibosh on the whole thing. You can have the most beautifully drawn comic in the world. And if the lettering is bad, oh my God, the whole thing falls apart. So, I mean, in a way, thank God for digital lettering because there were whole generations of cartoonists that were amazing cartoonists, but their lettering was terrible. And they could have been saved, frankly, by digital lettering.
Yes.
So now you have that benefit.
There's a comic that I see on Twitter from time to time. I think it's a gaming comic. The art is absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. The lettering is horrendous. And they time after time, they do these word balloons. They're all over the place. The tails go zigzagging around. They go, you need to diagram this thing to even know who's speaking when. And it's all because they put too many word balloons in a panel. They've got tails darting over every which way. This comic is keeping itself from being more popular because I guarantee you, nobody's wading through all that crap.
Yeah. Comics have been 100, 130 years of experimentation on what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And if you look at that first generation of popularized mass comics like Yellow Kid or Winsor McKay or the Katzenjammer Kids, look back at some of those and you'll see the mistakes that we're talking about because, frankly, they were still figuring it out. You'll see tails in Katzenjammer Kids cross each other and you'll see not so great lettering in Winsor McKay, even though he was inarguably the best artist ever in comics. He was amazing.
Yeah.
Take a page out of the ones that did it right. I think Bringing Up Father had amazing lettering, and especially in the war years and just after the war years in the 50s and 60s, comics really got it down. They figured it out. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Some of these newspaper guys started basically to consult with the cartoonists and saying, here's what you need to do to get your letting and your kerning right. Here's how to set up an Ames lettering guide in your comic. what I'm saying is a good cheat is to take your favorite comic, a comic that you think does lettering perfectly. Like, let's say Bill Watterson, right? Let's grab Calvin and Hobbes. Mm-hmm. Take a Watterson comic, blow that up, that panel, to the size of one of your panels, and check out what his letting and his kerning is. It is a great way to show you, oh my God, I have my letters way too tight together. Or, oh my God, I have my line spaces way too far apart. I need to tighten this up. And you'll see as time goes on, as you get better at it, you'll look back at your early stuff and being like, it reads like a child because it's in the way that a kid in lined paper writes way too big or the lettering is way too far apart. You'll see that in your first 100 comics when you get past it. You'll look back and go, oh, God.
What was I doing?
So to Brad's point, not to belabor the point, but this is a great one. Get the lettering right.
And the last thing that just flew into my mind that I've got to say, because it's the easiest way to really do bad comics, learn the crossbar I rule. Crossbar I.
Oh, my God, yes.
A capital letter I, when they talk about crossbars, they're actually talking about serifs. Now, serifs are those little notches that kind of hang off a letter form. Times New Roman has serifs. Helvetica does not. It's a sans serif font. Sans being the French word for without serifs.
Right.
So most of your comics lettering fonts are going to be sans serif. But we traditionally use the serif version of the capital letter I to keep it from looking like a number one or a lowercase L. You do not use the crossbar I in any other instance other than the personal pronoun I.
Mm-hmm.
So if a lot of people make this mistake, if you have a word that starts with the letter I, like including, and that comes at the beginning of the sentence, you tend to hit the shift bar when you hit the I, and that gives you your crossbar I in a lot of comics fonts. That's incorrect. And the reason it's incorrect is it's poor typography. It pushes the other letters too far out from that to be read properly. Putting a crossbar I inside of a word, like a word that has I in the middle, horrendous, terrible to try to read, okay? You only use the crossbar I for the personal pronoun I. In all other instances, you use the sans serif I in your comics lettering font. And that's the crossbar I rule. You gotta learn it. And by the way, people always say, well, it looks fine to me. I understand that. It's because you haven't developed your aesthetic and you don't understand
your editorial
typography.
Eye doesn't see how big of a red flag that is.
And it's okay. Yeah. I get it. It looks fine to you. But it's not good. And it's drawn that typography back and making it actually harder for your readers to read.
Yeah. And I will say one last thing about lettering within a word bubble or a voice bubble or a word balloon. And this might help you as you start to improve your lettering process, which is lettering within a word bubble is a dance between two things: a consistent amount of negative space around the word form within the balloon. What I mean by that is that you try to create a balloon shape and a word shape, a word mass shape that creates as consistent a negative space as possible around the circle of that word balloon, right? That's part of the dance. The other half of the dance is you want to try to break your sentences up, and this is kind of going back to sixth grade writing, where we used to diagram a sentence, for example. So if I say, like, the big dog ran around the park happily, you'll try to break that sentence up in a way that fits the word balloon, but you'll do it in chunks. So the big dog, word break, ran around happily, word break. What did I say? Wearing a hat, you know, full stop. So what I'm getting at there is that you want to make it so that the brain can process it in easy chunks. And then it goes to the next line and it is an easy chunk. Avoid wherever possible a word break if you can.
No hyphenization at all, unless it's a hyphenated word. Hyphenization.
Really try to avoid a word break. To me, it just looks super amateur hour when you have to word break a word. And then remember, if you have stumbled upon in your writing a word that's so long that you're like, how do I break this up? If you're like Renaissance, well, remember that most people read it at 6th or 7th grade level anyway, and you can change a word like Renaissance into change
or medieval.
You can find a word substitution that is less chewy and that also works for most people anyway, because clarity in the writing will help you. But what I'm getting at is most word bubble presentation is a dance between consistent negative space around the inside of the word bubble or word balloon, and mirrored against breaking the sentence in easy to digest chunks. So those two things will guide how you create a word chunk in a word balloon.
What Dave's talking about when he talks about that interior negative space is an interior border. And here's what you're looking for. If your letters almost touch the line of the word balloon, you're doing it poorly. You need to make that word balloon bigger. Okay, you need to have some space that your text floats in inside that word balloon. You see so many people where the letters almost touch or sometimes touch the line of the word balloon. That's bad typography. That's bad comics lettering. You need to give that a nice, consistent internal border. And like Dave said, think about how you're breaking the words up. A lot of us use Adobe products to do our lettering, whether it's Photoshop or InDesign or Illustrator. And in Adobe products, you draw a text box. And you can always tell who's using Adobe because they just let those words break wherever that box tells them to break, right? Instead, so their sentence might be, the big dog was wearing a hat. Well, you want to keep the big dog together because that's how you say it, the big dog, right? Mm-hmm. So, but they're breaking all over the place just because that's where the text box is breaking it. And we've never been used to worrying about those breaks when we use any other type of typography, like if you're writing a book report or something like that.
Right.
So think about those line breaks very carefully and give yourself a nice internal border. Yeah, you're right, Dave. The problem with lettering is that it's such a visual topic. It's hard to do in podcast form.
Yeah. But I found myself struggling on how to describe that.
Yeah, it's a real, but that's why
we're talking about it. And it's fun. It's fun to start getting it right.
Go out and like I told you, go out to, I think it's Blambot or at Blambot, Nate Pinkos.
On Twitter.
Look at the images that he posts. You can see on the upper right-hand corner all the images that somebody mm-hmm. posted on Twitter. Just go through those.
Yep.
Man, he's got it all set for you. So
it's fantastic.
That brings us to number 10. And number 10 is...
Da-da-da-da!
Yeah, no, I should have a little stinger there. Number 10 is the most important one because it encompasses all of this.
Okay.
And that is love what you're doing. Love your comic.
Gosh,
absolutely love the process, because for a long time, that's all you're going to have is love. You're not going to have social media adoration. You're not going to have money.
Nope.
You're not going to have success. You're not going to have people throwing themselves at your feet when you walk down the street. All of those fantasies that a young Brad Geiger had are not going to come to pass for you either. Chances
are. The love is so important because the love that got you into it should be the love that sustains you. And also, if the love is there, if the joy is there in the comic, it comes through. And so if you're having fun, they're having fun. So I really co-sign this point from Brad, is that maintain the love for the process and the joy for doing it, because that is what's going to sustain you in good times and bad, is mm-hmm. that comics are fun to make.
Yes.
They are fun to think of. They're fun to create and put down on paper. And so if you maintain that love for the process mm-hmm. and the joy in doing it, gosh, mm-hmm. that's 90% of the way there, you know?
Well, plus, conversely, all these things that we're warning people about, right? Watch your social media.
Yeah, there's a lot of negatives. Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but it takes our emphasis away from the love. In other words, all of this actually leads to number 10, because the reason I'm telling you not to get wrapped up in merchandise yet, there's a lot of practical reasons that we went through, but it also is taking your mind off of the love
yes.
of doing comics.
Yeah, great point. Yeah.
Same thing for social media. It's taking your attention away from the love of making comics. And those things are all going to come at their own time, no matter whether you try to force them or not. You can try and force it. It's not going to go any better for you, chances
right.
are. You're so much better just to really concentrate on pouring that love in. By the way, that's also the best way to get good at comics in a shorter amount of time, is to pour all that love into it. And don't get distracted by trying to find the magic hashtag. Don't get distracted by a Kickstarter when you're not really ready for it. All those things are distractions. How many times, this has become a theme, by the way, Dave, in the last several shows, people who started Patreons that aren't ready for their Patreons.
Right.
And now they're confused. They're lost. What do I do now? And now I have three Patreon backers. I don't know what to do with them. This was too early for them. They still should have been in the love it category.
Yes.
And then build out slowly from there. Listen, we've talked about this before. You want to get to the point where you are an old master, just like Dave and I trying to rough up our brushes so that we could feel like full-time cartoonists and old masters earlier, right? We did that. The reason we can talk about this is we've been
we
there.
We did all this.
We
yeah.
know all of this. This is not new for you. This is
Nor should it be embarrassing to you that we're pointing this out, because we did it ourselves, you know?
And 10 times worse. 10 times worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
But do it for the love. And let that be the reason you do it for a long time. Literally, I'm saying a couple of years.
Yeah.
A couple of years.
And honestly, it sounds cheesy to say out loud, but comics are incredible and incredibly fun to make.
Yeah.
It is this beautiful marriage of words and pictures where you get to play all the roles. You are director, you are costumer, you're set designer, you're writer, you're actor.
Everything.
And it's all you. It's one of the rare things in life that you can do all by yourself. And when you keep the joy and in that process, when you revel in the process of being able to create a comic, God, that's wonderful. That is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. Even in the great arc of human history, the fact that you are sitting down with something in your hand and drawing, what a great gift that is. You're not digging a ditch. You're not fighting in a war. This moment should be one of the best parts of your day. If you're coming home from a crappy day at work and you're working on a comic, that's amazing. That's a fun thing to do.
Yeah. And the reason that I say a couple of years is that, Dave, we saw this happen time and time again when we wrote the How to Make Webcomics book. We had something called the 9-month itch. People, and this happened, by the way, you guys, happened all the time.
Still happens.
We would get an angry letter from a cartoonist who had hit the 9-month part and was not as successful as they thought they were, and felt betrayed by the book because their reading of the book led them to believe that if they did all these things, that it was going to happen. And 9 months was consistently when we would get the email from people saying, well, I did everything in the book, and I'm not famous yet.
It's as though the title of the book had been Thinner Thighs in 30 Days, and they had gotten to 31 days and be like, wait a minute, my thighs!
I've still got fat thighs! So yeah, that's why I say a couple of years, because I don't want you to be one of these 9-month itchers. I want you to be in this, like Dave said earlier, and he was absolutely right, I want you to be a marathoner, not a sprinter.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
That's our top 10 advice pieces for beginners. Hold on, I feel like I interrupted you, Dave. What were you about to say?
No, I was going to say, also in comics, get yourself a friend like Brad Geiger, who puts together a whole list of 10 things that all you have to do for a whole show is go, uh-huh, yep, oh, big cosine,
Brad.
Oh, that too, yeah. Uh-huh. And you can just mainly quietly sip your coffee in your podcasting closet. Yeah. And that's a great way to go through life, I got to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. And that coffee looked good, too. You're just about to the end of it.
Just about at the end. That's a full pint of coffee gone, Brad.
So listen, just in case you want them, Dave had a good idea as we were doing pre-show. Here's the list in order so that you can, if you want.
Yeah, you can pause and rewind this section. This is for you to jot down to keep
this
nearby.
Is so you can kind of have an idea of how to find these later if you need to go back and think about some of these and maybe hear them again. Number one, attitude adjustment. Have reasonable expectations. Number two, just do it. Don't look for the right time or the perfect comic or any of that other stuff. Just do it. Number three, consistent, frequent, and significant. That should be your update schedule. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's going to be different for every single cartoonist. There is no perfect update schedule anymore. Number four, social media. Step back from social media. Don't make it a focus. It should be something you use as a utilitarian way to publish your webcomic, but you should not be worried about building a social media audience at this point. That's going to come as you do better comics. Number five, save your money. Don't advertise yet. Number six, merchandising. Don't do it. By the way, we got a lot of don'ts here.
I know. That's why that number 10 is so important, because the focus is back on the joy at the end. Yep. So that's good. Keep going.
Merchandising. Wait. Number seven, prepare for success. Scan your stuff in high res. Start working on a website because start tracking your expenses because you will get there. This is not saying you're never going to get there. I want you to start preparing for it because as you focus laser sharp on your comic and getting better, that success, I'm very, very confident, will come. Number eight, stop poring over your stats. Those are going to grow in good time as well. Lettering, for the love of God, learn your lettering. It is not intuitive. If you've never thought about lettering, chances are you're doing it wrong. There are lots of good guides, lots of good places to get information on this, including, by the way, webcomics.com. The How to Make Webcomics book has a chapter on lettering. The updated version, the Webcomics Handbook that I wrote, has an entire deep dive on lettering. Lots of places to get information on this, folks. Mm-hmm. And number 10, love it. Love the thing that you're doing. That's going to be because the other stuff isn't going to come for a little while. You've got to be realistic about that. All you're going to have is your love for the first little while, and it's got to be enough. You've got to do it because you love it.
It's interesting how many of those first nine are, and I say this because I did them myself.
Yeah.
How many of the first nine are a little bit cargo culting what it is to be a cartoonist in your mind's eye?
Yes.
Like, I want to be a big time cartoonist, and so I'm going to cargo cult these things, right. And then I'll feel like a cartoonist. But really, the focus should be on number one and on number 10, which is keep your attitude in the right place that you're focusing on the comic, and number 10, which is keep the joy and the love active, because that's going to power the comic. And forget all this other stuff about going through the motions of what other cartoonists seem to be doing or what you think you should be doing with cartoonists, and just focus on the comic.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's such a good point. Cause it is cargo culting. It's like, well, I'm not going to be a success until I do a Kickstarter. So I better do a Kickstarter.
Well, right. I got to set up that Patreon. We got to have that merch.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like everybody else is advertising. I got to advertise, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. What do we say on the show all the time? First, learn the why behind the what. Once you learn why to do a Kickstarter, then you can do the Kickstarter. But if you're just doing the Kickstarter without learning the why, wait off for a little bit.
Well, and in addition to Brad's number 1 through 10, I'm going to add my number 11, which is, as you're doing your cartooning, never forget to buy a small 8 to 13-pound dog and get an 80 to 100-pound bag of food, dry food at a Sam's Club or a Walmart or a Costco. And then by the time that bag is done, you will have become a professional cartoonist.
Yeah,
so that's Dave Kellett's surefire way for magical thinking and planning out your comics career.
That's right. And with that, I'm going to tell you that you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com. Why are you laughing?
Because you did a total Orson Welles right there.
Today's Comic Lab is brought to you by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, creator of magical thinking and realism in literature, but that's all right. I didn't do it. I did it, so I guess I did it. Never mind.
And my friend, the deep reference throwing Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at SheldonComics.com and Drive at DriveComic.com.
And the fantastic Comic Lab theme song that gets you jumping in your seat every week when you hear it is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode and all episodes was edited by the fantastic Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that as though you've bought an 80-pound bag of dog food. patreon.com/comiclab.
So, Dave, I think what you're basically saying is when your government is talking to dirt.
Oh, my God, Brad. do you smell burnt toast?
I got such what I think is a good punchline, but okay, it's a go ahead. Twist. It's a tongue
twist. Now, Bree, we're all rooting for you. You go ahead and say it. Shh. Take your time. Take your time. Breathe.
So, Dave, I think what you're trying to say is when you've got...
God bless America!
So, Dave, I think what you're trying to say is when your government has turned to dog shit, you've got to turn to dog food.
Oh, Brad, tomorrow I want you to know when you're standing naked hovering over your scale in your bathroom, I want you to know that I appreciated that joke, Brad.
Somebody had to. I'm just glad I could get it out.
That's what ablutions are for, Brad.